Yeah, oh, it's fine stuff there. Here. And the, excuse me, mellow sounds of WUSB. I'll just move that over there. Oops. Oh, well. Good evening. All right, I'm late. I'm sorry, okay? I mean, it happens. It happens to everybody. It happens to me. Well, it seems to happen to me more than anybody else, but that's just the way it is, isn't it? Okay, I had something else I had to do, and it took longer than I thought, and here I am now, so, great. Well, no more music, except for our usual remix version of a Big Audio Dynamite song, which we just have to do. It's become sort of a habit here. Then we'll get into our program, which, by the way, is called Brain Damage. And you're invited to call in and spout your rhetoric, 632-6901.
Why is night right out wrong? Lyrics for the focus song. Number Recording already in progress.
Good evening. It's time for the next part of Brain Damage. We have heard our unique song from Big Audio Dynamite, which I guarantee you never heard anywhere else before, right? Of course not. Our telephone number is 632-6901. It's a Saturday night. It's one of those days of the week, I guess you would say. And recovering from being late. Now, we're just trying to catch up to all the things that we usually do. Included is our own very precious radio program.
This is your program,
our
Moscow
program.
Mailbag.
Yes. Hit it.
We'll start off by looking at some of the questions in today's mailbag. Is the Soviet newspaper Moscow News distributed in the United States? Is your space shuttle a waste of money? And how do you treat hay fever? These questions and more are coming up in today's edition of Mailbag. Let's now take them one at a time. The first one comes from K.A. Ranson of New Milford, Connecticut. I write to express my interest in the draft principles of criminal law in your country that would reportedly reduce the number of capital offenses. I welcome these proposed changes in Soviet law and hope not only that they will be adopted, but that they will constitute a first step toward the total abolition of capital punishment in your country. I would be very interested to learn more about the use of the death penalty in the USSR and to hear the views of other Soviet citizens on that issue. What are some of the Soviet Union's capital offenses?
There are currently 17 capital offenses punishable by the death sentence. These include high treason, terrorism, aggravated cases of murder, and some economic crimes, such as embezzlement, bribery, and making counterfeit money, on a particularly large scale, of course. However, in recent years, the latter group of offenses, the so-called economic crimes, are no longer punishable by death. Under the proposed reform of the Soviet Union's criminal code, the number of capital offenses will be reduced. Economic crimes no longer fall into this category. Exempted from the death penalty also will be all minors under the age of 18, and women and men over 60 years of age.
Is there much public support for the idea of abolishing the death sentence altogether?
Well, I think that most people would support abolishing capital punishment for economic crimes and in cases of minors and old people. But according to a recent public opinion poll, 80 to 85% of the population is opposed to the abolition of the death sentence altogether. The issue has been highlighted in the news media by sensational accounts of murders committed by seemingly incorrigible and remorseless hardcore criminals. And this, of course, has influenced public opinion, turning it heavily against total abolition. Actually, capital punishment in Soviet history was abolished on three occasions, in 1917, 1920, and 1947, only to be reintroduced. But the threat of death, it seems, has never deterred capital offenders. For example, capital punishment for bribery on a particularly massive scale was enacted in 1961. But within a decade, that's 1977 to 1987, the number of such offenses trebled. Faced with an unprecedentedly high rate of crime increase these days, the public naturally favors stronger measures against criminals and particularly capital offenders.
What are the arguments of those who oppose the death sentence?
Well, their basic argument is that the punishment is inhumane, and most important, it does not act as a sufficient deterrent. A prominent opponent of the death sentence is the eminent scholar Dmitry Likhachev, who claims the measure is contrary to Russian cultural traditions. In the 19th century, there was no capital punishment for criminal offenses, only for political crimes. And Russian cultural giants, such as Tolstoy and Dostoevsky, were against capital punishment. They believed that execution dehumanized individuals. One killer is replaced by another, that is, the executioner. The physicist and human rights campaigner Andrei Sakharov says he is against capital punishment because, among other things, it presupposes the establishment of a functioning executionary institution. And to him, this entire idea is horrible.
Well, enough about that. Let's have another letter. It comes from Michael Squires of Rockville, Maryland. With the launch of two Soviet cosmonauts to the Mir orbital station once again, I'm wondering whether or not there will be further international participation in the Soviet Union's space program.
Yes, several projects involving foreign participation are in the making. A British astronaut is to fly aboard a Soviet space vehicle in 1991. Austria and West Germany have likewise reached agreements for space rides aboard Soviet vehicles. And French officials have called for regular flights of their spacemen, perhaps once every 2 years, and lasting for at least a month. A Spanish astronaut is also in the offing. Next year, a Japanese journalist is scheduled to blast off into space together with Soviet cosmonauts. The announcement touched off a minor controversy in this country because no Soviet journalist has ever traveled into space. Now, Soviet journalists are trying to select one of their profession best fitted and qualified to take this ride.
Will Americans be permitted to apply for any flights, such as singer John Denver? The U.S. has unfortunately discontinued its civilian in space program, with no sight on starting citizen participation in the years ahead.
Well, there's nothing to stop American citizens from applying for participation in the Soviet space program. The problem with John Denver was the money, as I understand it. He wasn't up to shelling out a cool $10 million. That was the going rate at the time for a ride aboard a Soviet space vehicle. And this included pre-flight preparation and training. I understand the Japanese are now paying much less for putting their man aboard. Last year, during a Soviet-American summit in Moscow, the two sides agreed to resume bilateral cooperation in space research. But the agreement is rather general and non-committal. The Soviet Union has offered American firms the use of its space launchers for such purposes as putting communication satellites into orbit. The same offer is open to other foreign companies, but the American government passed a law which prohibits delivery to the Soviet Union of American-made components incorporated in space equipment. And so that effectively bars many interested foreign firms from taking up the Soviet offer.
Next, we have a question from our longtime listener, George Nikolaov of Rexdale, Ontario, Canada. I hear that still in use are the Soyuz MT and the Progress-type spacecraft. I thought the Buran reusable spacecraft was built to replace those two. The first manned flight of Buran is reportedly scheduled in 1992. Is Buran not a waste of money, since it will not be used until 1992?
Well, the Buran space shuttle was first tested in space last November when it made two circles around the Earth in 3 hours, 25 minutes. However, the vehicle had hardly touched down when it became embroiled in a major controversy around the issue of why was it necessary to build such a costly space vehicle in the first place. Buran's principal booster is not unlike the U.S. Saturn V rocket, which was originally designed for the Apollo space program. The Americans, as you know, discontinued its production after the completion of the Apollo program. The super powerful and super costly Energia, as the Soviet booster is called, came too early for some needs, too late for others. Critics do charge that at the moment there is no practical use for the Buran spacecraft. Cargo delivery to orbit by the Soviet shuttle would be 20 to 40 times more expensive than with time-tested disposable carriers. So time alone will tell whether the Buran project proves a major accomplishment or a total waste of money, as some critics maintain. Meanwhile, Soviet space officials have yet to convince increasingly skeptical lawmakers that investing in space research on such a grand scale is appropriate at this time of economic hardships and budget constraints.
John Ellie Holman of Billerica, Massachusetts, wonders if there is hay fever in the USSR. Is it treatable? What do you do to alleviate the symptoms?
Well, it's one of the most common afflictions. Everywhere in the world you will find people allergic to pollen. Wherever there is vegetation and flowers, you will find some people suffering from hay fever. There is no absolute cure for hay fever, I'm told, but you can alleviate the symptoms with certain drugs such as ephedrine, adrenaline, and antihistamines. But the most common treatment is to stay out of places where you can be affected by flying pollen. If you are given to such afflictions, you are not likely to enjoy the smell of freshly cut grass or other rustic pastoral pleasures.
Now a letter from Robert Bryant of Harper's Ferry, West Virginia. I once read an issue of Moscow News and found the articles very informative. I was surprised by the openness of the articles, especially about the miners' strike. It occurred to me that this publication should be considered for distribution in the United States. I note it is put out in Moscow, Athens, London, Milan, and Paris. Why not in New York, Washington, L.A., etc.? I would consider the distribution of Moscow News in the United States another step toward understanding and peace.
Moscow News is currently published in 9 languages, and recently they even attempted a trial issue in Esperanto. Although it was primarily designed as a publication for foreign readers, in this era of glasnost and perestroika, the weekly has become tremendously popular with Soviet readers too, largely due to its informative, outspoken, and trailblazing style. The paper was first launched in 1930, and one of its first editors was an American, Anna Louise Strong. And she once predicted that the newspaper's logo would be the highlight on Pushkin Square in Moscow's downtown. Her words eventually proved to be prophetic. But that happened only a few years ago, not before she herself was deported from the Soviet Union in 1949 on trumped-up charges of espionage and not before the paper's first editor-in-chief was arrested and subsequently executed by Stalin's thugs. As far as the paper's distribution in the United States is concerned, you can subscribe to it at several locations in your country. Unfortunately, not in West Virginia. The distributors closest to your home are in Maryland and Illinois. I'll give you their addresses. In Maryland, the address is Victor Kamkin Incorporated, 12224 Park Lawn Drive, Rockville, zip code 20852. I'll repeat that. Victor Kamkin Incorporated, 12224 Park Lawn Drive, Rockville, zip code 20852. And in Illinois, it's Imported Publications Incorporated, 30020 West Ohio Street, Chicago, zip code 60610. I'm told that in New York and Washington, you can buy Moscow News at newsstands, some of them at least.
Next, a couple of questions from David Snodgrass of Harrisonburg, Virginia. Is Martin Luther King Day a national holiday in the Soviet Union?
No, it isn't, but people in the Soviet Union have a great deal of respect for the late civil rights activist and sympathize with the cause he advocated. His 60th birthday anniversary last January was marked by the Soviet news media. And we here in the North American service of Radio Moscow ran a special last January marking the occasion and featuring his voice with his famous I Have a Dream.
David also asks, do the majority of Soviet people, who have virtually no racial prejudices against blacks at all, have any bitterness or resentment against former Governor George Wallace of Alabama? Do you remember any Radio Moscow reporter ever interviewing the governor, either in Alabama or in the Soviet Union?
Well, I don't remember George Wallace ever venturing into the Soviet Union. Certainly, it would have been unthinkable in the past in his heyday. But I'm sure that were he still alive, he could come these days if he wanted to. Lots of Americans with similar views have come to visit this country in recent years. Whether or not they change their views, well, that depends on them, as long as they're willing to see the country for themselves and get first-hand impressions. Many formerly prejudiced Americans have, in fact, changed their views. But then the Soviet Union itself has changed dramatically over the past 5 years or so. As for racial prejudices, you may find some people staring at blacks, particularly those unaccustomed to seeing people of a different race, but I wouldn't call it exactly prejudice. It's more in the nature of curiosity. While Moscow itself is a cosmopolitan city, it is deluged with visitors from other parts of the country who may never have seen a black person in their lives, naturally. However, like everywhere else, you will find here people who are prejudiced against all races other than their own, just like I'm sure you'll find blacks prejudiced against whites and the other way around. We are doing our best to eradicate such prejudice.
And that's it for today's Moscow Mailbag. If you have any questions that you would like answered on this program, drop us a line. Our address is the North American Service of Radio Moscow, Moscow, the USSR.
Well, I got a question for you guys over there. Where's the person that used to do Moscow Mailbag? I can't remember his name for the life of me. If anyone out there who's still awake, I mean, I realize that one was a little bit boring because the guy was just kind of like a monotone person, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to criticize the program. It's nice enough of them to send it to us, but, I mean, he does need some pep in his delivery, I think. What is the guy's name? If anyone is actually listening to this radio program. And I know that people do listen to Moscow Mailbag because they ask for it, sometimes rather forcefully. So if you can remember who that guy's name is, it would certainly save me, you know, a night of staying up wondering about it. You know, he was kind of funny and gave a political joke now and then and was very matter-of-fact about everything. So maybe this is somebody that knows the answer. 632-6901. Good evening. Uh-oh. Hold on. There seems to be something wrong with the phone again. Hold on one moment while we unscrew something here. Hello, can you hear me?
Okay, you can hear me, but we can't hear you. One moment, please. This is very embarrassing, folks, very embarrassing, but just further proof that this place is falling apart. I'm going to have to put you on hold and go to a tone so that I can tell. Ah, it is working. Hello.
Hark.
Ah, we do hear you now, except the board is all opened up. I'm going to ask you to continue talking while I close the board and see if your voice goes away.
Should I just randomly read various bits of material?
That's fine. The board is now closed, and you're still with us. I think I fixed the problem. You wouldn't believe, folks, how I fixed this problem, literally by reaching into a bunch of electronics and just yanking something. It seems to work. What's on your mind, sir?
Sparks?
Sorry?
Any sparks flying?
Sparks? No, not yet. It has happened, though, before, but no, let's hope not. Are you calling to tell me the name of the person who used to do Radio Moscow mailbag, whatever?
No, actually, I just wanted to tell you. Mr. Corley, the Stormberg Press, is having a 10th anniversary party next weekend.
Oh, my goodness. And I used to be on the Stormberg Press, you know?
That is right.
Wow.
Who knows? You may want to...
It hasn't been 10 years, though, has it? No, it couldn't have been.
Just since it was founded.
Oh, I was around when it was founded. This is a sobering moment for me. When is this?
You are that old. Next Saturday night.
Wait a minute. Next Saturday night?
Park.
What time Saturday night?
Would you believe from about 5 to 11?
From about 5 to 11. Well, I might be able to show up for some of it. But I'm not even going to be here for the radio show because I've got another commitment. Yeah, I got three commitments in one night.
Everything in one night.
Yeah, but you know what we're going to air in my place next week? A Black Mass. That's right, in honor of Halloween, we are going to actually air a Black Mass. And that's not like, you know...
Yeah, I know.
A gospel get-together or anything like that, that's like, you know, it's not really devil worship. Maybe it is devil worshiping. I don't know, but it's the stuff they're always accusing us of doing. Now we're going to do it.
We'll find out.
What the hell, you know? Okay, well, I appreciate you calling to tell me this. Where is this thing going to take place?
Well, you can call us back at the press, and you can find out.
Okay, somebody gave me a little piece of paper here with your number on it, and, I'll call you back after the show. How's that?
The community will love it.
Beautiful.
Adios.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
632-6901 is our telephone number, and I just learned a bit of interesting news there. But, no, really, I would like to know who the other person was that did Radio Moscow, or Moscow Mailbag, actually, is the proper name for it, because I thought they were very good, and I hope they weren't, you know, purged or anything like that. It would be a real bummer to hear that. It's 11 o'clock. You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. This is Brain Damage with you until midnight. And we'd like to take your phone calls at 632-6901. But first, before we get into that, there's a song I'd like you to hear, a short song. I'd like you to listen to the lyrics of it. It's kind of old, actually, but I think it applies to the events of this past week. So get on your phones, call 632-6901, and we'll get right to you after this.
The pain.
Well, it seems like a nice enough song, doesn't it? It's called California Jam, and it's actually a prophecy of doom. And it sounds sort of like what went on this week, with lyrics like, the San Andreas misfortune will claim the lives of sons and wives. The headlines will fill page after page. And that's what happened this week. That's headlines certainly filled many, many pages, and the news filled many hours of television. And like any kind of reflections on those incidents, any personal reflections would certainly be interesting. That the band that played that song, incidentally, is called Klaatu. That was the album, in fact, that there was this crazy rumor going around back in 1977 that it was actually the Beatles. It didn't sound much like the Beatles to me. I mean, there is a guy there that has a remarkable ability to sound like Paul McCartney. In fact, let me try to find the song here. I'm going to do this in my headphones so you don't hear the amateur sound of chewing up a record on the air. Okay. So I'm able to do two things at once, talk and chew up a record at the same time. And actually, you probably have no idea what's going on, but This particular song here, excuse me, the guy has a remarkable voice. Sounds just like Paul McCartney. Listen to this.
Back in 1870,
that's Paul McCartney, I think.
Just beneath the great white plain, Alfred Beach works secretly.
But I don't think it's really the Beatles. I never really did think it was them, but some songs in this record sound more like them than other songs, and California Jam certainly isn't one of them. There is one part in this song, let me see if I can find it. If there's anybody out there that knows Morse code, okay, if you really know Morse code, this is your chance, because I've been looking for somebody for over 10 years now to translate this secret message that appears at the end of this song, and no one has been able to do it, because it comes very fast, and it's not very easy to hear. It starts off, I think, in the left speaker, and then sort of moves over. Let me see if I can subtly place down the needle. Whoops. Let's see. Okay. Coming up in the left speaker, so just keep listening. Okay, well, you might not have even heard the Morse code in there, but there was Morse code. I don't know if it was playing out gibberish or what. If there's anyone out there that really knows this stuff, give us a call sometime and tell us what it means. But it's one of the secrets that I've always been wanting to uncover. Anyway, enough of that. Enough of this music. Enough music, period. Let's make a phone call, all right? Think we should do it?
All right.
It's your idea, so we're going to do it. Yes, Mike, the building manager, is in here, and we're going to make a call to San Francisco if we can get through. And this person is probably not home, but we're going to try anyway to see if they pick up. And if nothing else, we'll hear an answering machine or something.
You've reached Neil at 9617489. Isn't it really nice to know that the place where you live and the place where you work can survive a 7.0 earthquake? I'm not afraid of the aftershocks, but if I see the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man walking around, I'll be on the first plane out of here. Leave a message at the beep. I'll get back to you.
Well, we're not going to leave a message, but it's good to hear some sign of life out there. And what a crazy week it's been for San Franciscans, for people in general. In fact, I don't know if you folks have heard the news, but it's a new name in the news as of tonight. His name is Buck Helm. Buck Helm. He's called the miracle survivor of Northern California's catastrophic earthquake. He's hospitalized in critical and guarded condition. The 57-year-old was pulled today from the car he was driving when the top of Interstate 880 in Oakland came tumbling down Tuesday. He was in there for 80 hours. And I remember very clearly hearing the folks on TV, the mayors and the rescue workers and the anchormen, all saying there's no sign of life, there's no hope for survivors. You know, it's just the grim task of finding more bodies. And today after, it's Saturday and the thing happened on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the guy's been in there all that time, and he's alive. It's the most incredible thing. Anyway, his problems are just beginning. They include chest injuries, kidney failure, and dehydration, and doctors are only cautiously optimistic that he'll make it. But after nearly giving up hope of finding survivors, rescue workers are expressing amazement that Helm was found alive, and the discovery of Helm has added to the sense of urgency in the search operation. After Helm was rushed to the hospital, workers renewed their efforts to find other survivors between the fallen slabs of concrete. So far, though, no other survivors have been found. And another strong aftershock has rocked the San Francisco Bay Area, but no new damage is reported. The aftershock late today registered locally at 4.8 on the Richter scale, compared with 6.9 for Tuesday's Tembler, which is a strange word when you think of it. And the Richter scale is pretty strange also. A lot of people don't really understand how it works, and I don't really understand how it works, but I do know this much, that an earthquake measuring 6.9, well, let's say the earthquake on Tuesday was actually 7.0, not 6.9. That means it's 10 times more powerful than an earthquake measuring 6.0, and that's the way the Richter scale works. I don't quite know why or how. It's got something to do with logarithms. Maybe if somebody out there understands it, they can call in and sort of try to explain it to us. There's a big difference between a 6.9 and a 6.0 and, you know, an 8.4, which I believe is what they got in 1906. So, that's the story with that. Again, if anyone has ever had an experience with an earthquake, and there are a lot of people out there, any insight whatsoever, either, you know, if you're into geology or into, any other kind of thing where earthquakes play a part, give us a call now. The phone lines are wide open, 632-6901, and we'll be glad to talk to you. The earthquake shook down in San Francisco hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of walls and chimneys, but the conflagration that followed burned up hundreds of millions of dollars worth of property. There is no estimating within hundreds of millions the actual damage wrought. Not in history has a modern imperial city been so completely destroyed. San Francisco is gone. Nothing remains of it but memories and a fringe of dwelling houses on its outskirts. Its industrial section is wiped out. Its social and residential section is wiped out. The factories and warehouses, the great stores and newspaper buildings, the hotels and the palaces of the nabobs are all gone. Remains only the fringe of dwelling houses on the outskirts of what was once San Francisco. The smoke of San Francisco's burning was a lurid tower visible 100 miles away. And for 3 days and nights, this lurid tower swayed in the sky, reddening the sun, darkening the day, and filling the land with smoke. And this, by the way, is not an account of what happened last week. This is an account of the earthquake of 1906. And this is written by Jack London. On Wednesday morning at 5:15 came the earthquake. A minute later, the flames were leaping upward. In a dozen different quarters south of Market Street, in the working-class ghetto and in the factories, fires started. There was no organization, no communication. All the cunning adjustments of a 20th-century city had been smashed by the earthquake. The streets were lumped into ridges and depressions and piled with debris of fallen walls. The steel rails were twisted into perpendicular and horizontal angles. The telephone and telegraph systems were disrupted, and the great water mains had burst. All the shrewd contrivances and safeguards of man had been thrown out of gear by 30 seconds twitching of the earth crust. Well, last Tuesday it was only 15 seconds, and the city fared much better than it had back in 1906, but there were still some things that that remained to be answered, such as why in God's name was a kind of highway that would collapse onto itself. That just seems like such a incredibly stupid structure to have in a place that's known for earthquakes. Other than that, the city was incredibly prepared. I was amazed at the fact that there was virtually no destruction of any modern buildings. The skyscrapers are meant to sway, and that must be a scary thing to be in a skyscraper when it's swaying. I'd like to hear if anyone out there, what's going on here? Every week there seems to be less calls in this radio program. I don't know what's going on. Are my listeners dying off? Do we have some kind of a virus or something? I mean, listen to USB and you die? That's not the way it's supposed to work. 632-6901. Let's get those phone calls lit or we'll just play house music again, you know? Could do that. I understand the classical music show today was house music. I don't know why that's happening. And Brain Damage was house music for a little while. Well, that was my own fault. I was late, but if you want house music all the time, I guess we're well on the way to that if we don't hear any life out there. 632-6901. But I'd just like to hear people's impressions of all this, because this was an amazing week, you know? I mean, think of the timing. Think of the incredible timing of this thing, you know? The first... it's really funny. It makes you think that there is a God, and he does have a wicked sense of humor, you know? There is this World Series game, the first one in San Francisco in how long? 29 years or something like that? Everybody's in the stadium. They're all sitting down waiting for the game to begin. And that's when the earthquake strikes. I mean, come on, folks. That's, you know, the eyes of the nation are already on San Francisco. There's a live nationwide television feed coming from San Francisco when this happens. Right at that moment, right when it starts. You know, how is that possible? How do things like this happen? It's the most incredible thing.
The shuttle blew up. They were like, you know, 15 minutes later, everybody knew every joke about it.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I've got
it. Are there earthquake jokes going around now? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
They're starting.
Okay.
Just
that's your one.
Warned.
Or does it have to do with, like, pancakes and things like that? Because that's kind of...
I think one of them did, actually.
Oh, boy. Well, tell me one that you know. I mean, we might as well just...
I forget it. I have it at home somewhere.
You call up to tell me that they're making jokes and you can't remember any of them?
Well, something else. Whatever happened to the mountain lion, you know, that was running around?
The mountain... I think it was a cougar or something like that, or wildcat of some sort. I don't know. I asked that last week. It was out in Yaphank. There was a cat wandering around in the woods, and now it's gone.
So in the dumps.
Either someone found it and caught it and took it back into captivity, or the cat is out there proliferating like mad and interbreeding with all kinds of animals that are out there. Who knows?
Yeah, interbreeding. You see an interbreed with a turtle and you get some...
Well, I can't imagine a wildcat interbreeding with a turtle.
Yeah, I
but,
know that.
That's kind of why I'm out of it anyway.
Yeah, I understand that.
Anything? Did you watch TV? Did you watch all the coverage?
I saw some of it. I saw the car fall through that little hole in the bridge.
Isn't that incredible? You know, it's amazing how so many people are constantly filming.
The driver was a klutz. Come on, you see this big hole in front of you, and you drive right into it.
Well, I mean, you know, it's a bit of a surprise. For one thing, keep in mind that there was a big earthquake going on right before the hole appeared, so the guy might have been sort of like, you know, shocked out of his wits.
He's on the road.
And he might have lost control. He might not have been able to, I mean, we weren't right there. There might have been a much steeper incline than we were led to believe, and he might not have been able to stop. But, I mean... I don't understand how that couple from Oklahoma was just able to stand on the bridge and continue shooting their video so calmly, watching the car, you know.
No, you know what they were? They were in one of the UFOs that landed in Russia.
Oh, I forgot about that. It's amazing. Every week another news story comes up that tops the one. I think everything is getting crazier and crazier as the weeks go by. I don't understand what's happening here, but UFOs in the Soviet Union, huge earthquakes, all kinds of other weird things have been happening, too.
Not a conspiracy. You should know that.
It's not a conspiracy?
It is the Illuminati conspiracy.
Oh.
You know the Illuminatus?
No, I have no idea what that is.
All right, well, somebody must have said the, you know, the F word, you know. Wait, what did I say? It doesn't really matter.
Uh-huh.
Some people know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on the earthquake? Because that's kind of what I'm focusing on. Have you ever been through an earthquake? You ever felt one?
No, but I do remember when that oil tanker blew up in Long Island Sound.
In Northport?
Yeah, and everyone thought it was an earthquake.
I didn't think it was an earthquake. I thought someone was throwing stones at my house.
The wall was shaking.
Uh-huh.
Objects on my wall shook.
Yeah.
I thought it was an earthquake. My house shook.
I mean, I'm not saying I want to live through an earthquake. I mean, I'm not saying I want to die in an earthquake. I'm not saying I want to necessarily experience an earthquake, but I do sort of want to know what it feels like because, you know, I've been through hurricanes. been through blizzards, rain. What else is there? Not much else around here. I wouldn't really want to see a tornado. Well, I'd like to see a tornado, okay, in the distance, but I wouldn't want to have one come visit me. I'd like to sort of feel a little earthquake. I know we've had a couple of little ones around here, and I always seem to miss them for some reason.
So you have to see your doorbell ring. You open the door.
Yeah.
There's a twister waiting for you.
Twister here. The sign for this, yeah.
Good little boy. Would you like some candy?
I have a lot of respect for nature, you know. I am in awe of nature, and, you know, we continue to destroy other aspects of nature, but nature at any moment can come and destroy us.
Yeah, and you were right last week about the space shuttle going up and blowing up and dropping all the plutonium on everyone.
Well, I didn't say it was going to happen, did I? I said it was a possibility, you know, and maybe they did take enough safety precautions. I don't know, but I think I'm glad it was brought out. I'm glad they asked questions and at least aired their concerns. Let me just say this. I'm also very happy that probe is on its way to Jupiter because I'm really into interplanetary exploration as well.
No pictures.
Sorry?
We get some pretty...
Yeah, great pictures.
Yeah.
Amazing pictures. I'm looking forward to that.
We'll get them in 6 years, of course, but...
Well, that's... You know the boobs on TV were saying? They were saying it's a six-month voyage, you know? This is like national TV news, and they can't even get that right.
Years.
6 months, they said. I know, it's 6 years. You can't get to Jupiter in 6 months. Not on one of those things.
Longer than they went out for on the Star Trek thing. They went from one end of the galaxy to the other 50 times.
Yeah, but that Picard, he's a man, you know? I mean, they don't have men like that around here.
No, they're all in Ohio or wherever Kirk came from.
Yeah, right, Captain Kirk.
Yes.
Bullethead Kirk. Well, I'm going to go to some more calls.
First thing, Ronald Reagan, did you see him on TV, you know, when he went to Japan?
No, he went to Japan?
Yeah, he's getting paid $2 million to go do some speeches.
Really?
Yeah.
Paid by somebody here, no doubt.
No, someone there.
Really? Are they crazy?
They're paying him to go make some speeches.
I'd pay him to go make some speeches somewhere else.
I wouldn't. He was a good president, and don't you say anything bad about him. I remember...
Well, yeah, but we're talking a good, 30 years ago that he was president of the Screen Actors Guild?
That's not exactly what I was talking about.
Oh, that's exactly what I meant. Listen, we're talking about earthquakes. Let's not dampen everybody's spirit by talking about Reagan, okay?
Did you see, remember after he got that surgery on his head and it was like he was missing half his hair?
Yeah, the skinhead look.
He has a crew cut now, all over.
that's worth seeing.
I thought he re-enlisted in the Marines at first.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's one to do that. Well, listen, I'll talk to you later, eh?
Bye.
All right, 632-6901. Give us a call. Good evening. That's got to be interesting.
What can we get for 63 cents?
Joe Adamov.
And then what? Oh, boy. Good evening.
Good evening.
How are you?
Oh, all right. I just wanted to call up and comment on this week.
Okay, go ahead.
I think that this week is going to be known for three events. The week starting from Friday of last week. And the three events are going to be the crash of the stock market.
You know?
And it's, dropping from its all-time high.
Right, and you notice how we all forgot about that? Last week, that was what was on my mind the most, and after all the things that happened this week, we completely forgot about the stock market.
That's right, but a lot happened. The other thing was the collapse of the budget negotiations in Washington, and then, of course, the earthquake. But I think that the first of these three events is going to, in the next decade, be the most critical one. The stock market is now going to melt away within the next weeks to or a month or so.
Melt away to what?
It's going to melt away to potentially below a Dow of 2,000.
Uh-huh.
And the reason that I'm convinced of this is that I don't know if you watched Louis Rukeyser on Friday.
I occasionally run into it, but I really don't understand what he's talking about.
Yeah, well, it's really not. It's not too complicated at this point. I mean, what was interesting on Friday was that for the first time in his entire history of his show, he dropped his technical market index, which he normally puts out every Friday. And the reason he did it, I'm absolutely certain, is that it was so bad that he didn't want to put it on the air.
Really?
And he had Joe Granville on, who's a very famous market analyst. And he said, and this is a very conservative program. I mean, this is done by the Dow Jones News Retrieval Service and everything. And Granville is very Rukeyser is very conservative, but he had Granville on, and he said, this is a dangerous market. Could sell in any strength, and the Dow is now going to go steadily downward. And the rally that we had this week, which we covered two-thirds of the losses on Friday, was what he called a sucker's rally. And it's really going to get very scary now, because the meaning of what happened on Friday last week was totally mangled by the press, by the media. You know, they painted it with like it was some little catalytic spark.
Right.
There was a lot more than that. What happened on Friday was, when the UAL deal fell through, for the first time in the entire history of the LBO craze, the banks did not have the money to finance a deal. They were saying, look, we're tapped out. And the reason that this happened now is because a few weeks ago, starting with J.P. Morgan and then other banks, they had to fork over billions of dollars to cover their third world debts. One bank started it and you know, just wrote down so many billions of dollars to cover their third world debts. And then the other banks were forced into doing it. Otherwise, they would have lost confidence of their investors. And so now the UAL deal comes up, and they're tapped out. They're tapped out, and this is it, and that's why it dropped.
Okay, so what does it mean to somebody like me when the banks are tapped out? What is that leading to?
What that's going to lead to is very pure and simply, is a recession that's going to quickly turn into a depression. What it's going to mean to every one of us is, you know, you think the emergency rooms are crowded now. You think there's a lot of homeless people on the streets now. You think that there's cutbacks in the SUNY system. There's cutbacks in Medicaid funding now. Just wait until next year, because all this money that is lost is going to cut billions and billions and billions of dollars out of the tax revenues. And we are strapped. We are the world's leading debtor. The dollar is going to crash against the foreign currencies, and all of our standards of living are going to go down. And it's really incredible how the media and everyone around, you know, that I talk to is so deluded about this and unwilling to face this reality that is sure.
Well, I'm curious about one thing. How come it's taken so long for something like this to happen? Why have we been sort of riding on empty for the last, couple of decades, right?
Well, I subscribe to the analysis, the economic analysis of Ravi Batra, and who wrote the famous book, The Depression of 1990. And in his analysis, it's a cyclical phenomenon that happens every 60 years, and it's tied to, you know, the length, you know, how long humans live and how long it takes them to forget the past. And, you know, the data bears him out. There was a major depression in 1870. There was a major depression in 1930. And there's going to be a major depression in 1990.
Well, you know, apart from getting ready psychologically for it, what do you suggest people do?
Well, I can tell you what you should do is, if you have assets that you can sell and convert into cash, do so. If you have debts, try as hard as you can to get rid of them. The thing to do now is to get as much cash together into some kind of a very safe bank account.
Well, I understand why you're saying that, but still, at the same time, if everybody follows that advice, won't that just lead into a depression all the quicker?
Well, it's not a question of, you know, whether or not it's going to happen. It will happen. And the people who prepare for it are the ones who are going to be able to, you know, survive the best. It's not that I'm trying to, you know, create a panic. But, you know, this is a force. The forces of history are at work here, and they're inexorable. There's no way they're going to turn around. There's no way we can get rid of a multi-trillion dollar debt that our nation has saddled on it overnight. And we have basically saturated the world banking system with debt of our own creation. And, you know, that is not an abstraction. It's a reality. A lot of people in 1987, when the market crashed, they said, where did all the money go? Where did all the money go? And now, you know, what happened in the last year? The New York State budget is shot to hell because when the investors lost all that money on the market, they wrote off their losses, you know, from their taxes.
Now, where, you know, I don't want to sound overly stupid here, but where does all the money go? I mean, why are we in debt for trillions of dollars? What are, you know, what's been, who's been irresponsible over the last, you know, several decades?
Well, the main burden of responsibility obviously falls on the Reagan administration. Deregulation is one of the main culprits in this whole disaster, and one of the best examples of that is the savings and loan bailout scandal. You know, that is one of the most scandalous events in this century, because you have a situation here where they deregulated the industry, but while deregulating it, they said, we'll still insure your accounts, which is a way of saying, look, here's a bunch of money, gamble it away any way you like, because we will fill your accounts up when your banks fail. And that's exactly what happened, and so the money was squandered. You know, all this money has gone overseas. It goes into interest payments to foreign banks. It goes to the Bundesbank in West Germany. It goes to the banks in Tokyo. It goes to the banks in Korea. We borrow billions and billions and billions of dollars from those people. And as the debt accrues, the interest that we pay alone soaks up hundreds of billions of dollars over years. And, you know, I mean, in the federal budget, nearly 20 cents of every dollar of the federal budget goes to pay interest on the national debt. And that's where the money goes.
How much of this is due to defense spending?
Oh, well, a huge portion of it. I mean, clearly it's a very huge portion of it. You know, people ask, where does the money go? Well, the money goes, you know, to foreign countries, foreign banks, and so forth. It also goes into the pockets of the people who lie in the concentration of wealth in this country. Like, I mean, at the beginning of the Reagan era, there were maybe, I don't know, two or three, maybe four billionaires in the United States. Well, now there's something along the lines of 17 or 18 billionaires in this country. And simultaneously with that, you have a huge growth in the number of people who are in poverty.
What about all these corporate mergers and takeovers? What do they mean?
Well, what that means is that because of deregulation, again, this is critical. People don't realize the force of deregulation in the last decade. Deregulation made these leverage buyouts possible. Deregulation made the creation of junk bonds possible. And the buyouts are an extraordinarily dangerous thing because they destroy the industrial infrastructure. Because they, what typically happens is that they buy these companies, and then they have to chop off huge portions of them in order to raise the cash to pay back the people from whom they borrowed the money to buy the company originally. And it's a really nasty situation. For example, the Campo Corporation bought out a bunch of major retail firms like Bloomingdale's and Saks, and I forget exactly which ones, but major big-time chains. And now they are in deep trouble. They can't make their payments. And as a result, you know, they are having trouble getting their suppliers to ship them the merchandise. And, I mean, of course, the end result is that people are going to lose their jobs, and, you know, you're going to have more and more economic damage done.
Well,
and, I mean, for me, you have to put a positive face on this somehow. And the only
I was going to ask you about that. What's the positive part of all this?
Well, in my view, the positive part about this is that before you can, you know, build a just society and build a system that, you know, is more in harmony with nature and all these things that we know are important. You've got to shake down this rotten structure that we have right now. I'm not talking about revolution at all. I'm talking about creating a more just society. And before we do that, we have to, you know, wake people up. You know, I'm very disgusted with the left wing people in the country right now. You know, I mean, I'm really disgusted because they have done absolutely nothing to fight this incredible, you know, situation that we have. And I think that a major disaster, which we're going to see in the next year, is going to start waking people up. And so that there's a silver lining here.
Uh-huh. Well, it's, you know, I agree with you. It's quite possible things will get worse. And, you know, for the benefit of those people who are already there now, when all the rest of us come to join them, maybe then we'll see it from their point of view, you know. And
I hope that this is going to be a stimulus. I mean, like in the San Francisco earthquake, a lot of people, even though, you know, they did have their looting, which was not stressed enough by the media, for the most part, and I have a friend who lives in Oakland, and I talked to him on the phone and asked him about what was going on.
How much looting was there? I'm curious.
Well, they arrested, on one of the nights, I think it was just in Oakland, they arrested like about 50 people.
Uh-huh.
That was just the ones that they caught. There was gunfighting in San Francisco, people who were defending their property and stuff like that. And, I mean, I think that what's a really good example of how societies react to stress, depending on what the configuration of the society is St. Croix. When Hugo hit St. Croix and, you know, destroyed all the houses and everything, you know, it immediately revealed the economic injustice, because the poverty-stricken people that went out into the streets, they went into the shopping centers and took the merchandise out. And they had a real chaotic situation there for a while. And this is the thing that scares me a bit. You know, a society, I mean, if you take San Francisco as a city, it's doing reasonably well, you know, and it's in a category of cities sort of like Seattle and Minneapolis, cities which are smaller in size and doing relatively well economically. But what if we had a quake like this in Los Angeles, or something, an event similar to it in, let's say, Detroit,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, even in our own backyard, you know, what would happen, you know? And
they say it's quite possible in New York, and we're certainly not prepared for it.
Yeah, it's, I think that the analogy is that we're in for an economic earthquake. Within the next month, the fourth quarter of this year is going to be our entrance into a rather nasty depression.
Well, you know, I'm not doubting what you're saying, but I do think the rudest awakening will be for those people that are highest up on top, don't you?
Well,
I mean, the rest of us are already kind of facing hard times, aren't we?
Yes, that is absolutely true, and I don't, you know, I mean, when you are worth $1 billion. You can lose 90% of your wealth, and you're still a multimillionaire.
Yeah, that's true, but you've lost your status, and I think that's probably more important to those people.
Yeah, but they're in a very small minority. The forces are going to be coming from the bottom up. People think, for example, that food riots and martial law are only possible in these tiny third world countries. You know, and you know, and people were very complacent in Europe in the early 1930s about what was possible, and they got caught by surprise, and that's, unfortunately, a lot of people are still fairly deluded. I mean, people who now, you know, spend lots of money buying a house, for example, that's being deluded. I mean, that is pretending that, you know, reality doesn't exist, and I see this happening a lot, and you know, it's just never ceases to amaze me how how much people can kid themselves.
Okay, to close this off, let me just ask you one more question. What is it that you personally are going to do?
Well, right now I'm trying to finish my degree, and all this stuff, it gets me going, it gets me working so that I can get my degree as soon as possible.
What's your degree in?
Well, in experimental psychology.
Uh-huh.
A doctoral student.
Okay. Well, be interesting to see what goes on. Do you have any kind of a timetable on these predictions of yours?
Well, I kind of trust Joe Granville. He says that within the next weeks, and I
would say, okay, then we can talk about it on this show.
Yeah, well, oh yes, absolutely. We will definitely be able to within the next weeks to a month, maybe 6 weeks.
Uh-huh.
The circuit is going to melt away, and it's not going to crash the way it's been crashing in the past. This is another thing that the media didn't say anything about it. The market crashed on Friday, and on Saturday, the Fed, the central bank in Washington, they told the investors in Wall Street, don't worry, when you run out of money, we'll get more money for
right,
you.
Right, yeah. That was a very conscious effort on their part.
And they did that all week long. So they'll do everything in their power to prevent a major crash. And they have these circuit breakers and all this other...
Right, the protection.
But it won't stop it from inexorably declining downward.
Okay, well, we're going to continue, hopefully, to hear from you in the next few weeks and keep us updated on just how this is going, because we do need somebody who understands this stuff.
Okay, it will be my pleasure to do that.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right. Jimmy Doomsayer, wherever you are, we have somebody to replace you now because their portents of doom seem to be even greater and maybe even a bit more realistic. Time will tell, right? 632-6901, let's get those phone lines lit because we only have about 20 minutes left, and I know there's folks out there with something on their mind. I see a couple of them already on the line. We're going to get right to them. But I want to see some more lights light up. 632-6901, folks. Doesn't get more interesting than this. Remember the 70s, right? The 70s. That was boring. I mean, I remember living through the 70s saying, that was boring. That was dull. How can anybody ever say the 70s was my generation? Or maybe the early 70s was my generation. Yeah, okay, that's acceptable. But the late 70s? What, the Bee Gees, the Eagles? Come on, nothing. Absolutely nothing. This week, right, we have an earthquake. We have the threat of economic collapse. We have the threat of a space shuttle exploding over Florida and spreading plutonium hither and yon. I mean, it's an amazing week, and it's not an exception anymore. Last week, spaceships in the Soviet Union. Every week seems to be trying to top the last week. I mean, who knows what's going to happen next? Who knows? It's the most incredible time to be living, I think. Glasnost, you got, you had Reagan, that was fun. All kinds of fun things are going on. There's a lot to talk about, so no excuse. 632-6901. Give us a call. Good evening. Hello? Right. Well, that's interesting. I think there's probably more interesting things to talk about, though, right? I hope so. 632-6901. Phone lines are open. Area code 516. Oh, boy. What else? Okay, President Bush is being condemned by pro-choice supporters. There you go, another thing. The pro-choice whole controversy, right? Yeah, he's being condemned by pro-choice supporters and praised by anti-abortion activists. The reaction follows Bush's veto today of a measure that would have funded abortions for poor women victimized by rape or incest. It's impossible to understand the reasoning behind that. If somebody can possibly enlighten me, I would appreciate it. While one abortion rights leader charges Bush pandered to extremists, a National Right to Life Committee member says the president acted to protect human life. So the way I understand that, it means that if someone is raped, they cannot receive federal funds to get an abortion. Right. That makes a lot of sense to me. Bush's rejection of the abortion funding measure marks the third veto of his presidency. As with the first two, there does not appear to be enough support in Congress for an override. While the measure passed by a two-thirds majority in the Senate, it eked through the House. Wow, I never saw the word eked on the Associated Press copy before. And about 750 blacks and supporters faced occasional shouts of racial epithets as they marched today through a mostly white Chicago neighborhood. They treaded through the area where Mayor Richard M. Daley lives to bring attention to recent incidents of alleged police brutality. Although a few taunted the marchers, most whites who lined the streets stood silent. And for the first time in nearly three decades, there's word that South Africa's white minority government will allow a rally by the outlawed African National Congress. The announcement from activists comes a week after seven black prisoners who belong to the anti-apartheid group were released. One activist says the rally, to be held next weekend, will include a major address. And that's really it. They have another one of these stupid stories at the end, that, you know, like a baby panda birthday at a zoo, that kind of thing. I don't read that garbage. Look at this. What's going on here? What's happening? Are we on the air? Did we fall off the air or something? I know we're only broadcasting at 90% power. Do you know why? Because one of our tubes burned down, and we have to conserve the tube we have left, because if we don't, it'll explode or something horrible like that, and then we'll be off the air for a while, so we have to lower our power, and that's why we're... Maybe that's why nobody can hear us. I don't know. Where is everyone? I mean, at this time of night, on a Saturday night, we were getting bingos on the phone lines consistently, and now there's nobody around. What's going on? What's happening? I mean, I really would like to know. If anybody has seen all the USB listeners, like, being ferried away somewhere, you know? I mean, we can find out where they went. It's kind of scary. Another thing, somebody last week said they were trying to get through. A few people said this, in fact, and they weren't able to get through because of our terrific phone system. It was preventing all calls from getting through. I don't know if that's necessarily true. I heard it from about four or five different people, actually, so maybe it is. Our number is 632-6901. I expect to see those phone lines lit. Phone lines are still not lit, and I can only go on like this for a very short period of time. Now, I should mention that next week I'm not going to be here. Next week, in fact, there will be a black mass on the air, which will be fun. We'll have more details about that as they come in. We'll be back for 2 weeks. And you know very well, you know as well as I do, that there aren't very many radio talk shows that actually allow you to talk on the air. You know, most of them only allow you to say certain things. And if you don't say those things, you get cut off immediately. Well, here, we're just a bit more open than that. We allow you to say whatever is on your mind. And right now, I'd like to know where all those minds are. I really think we must have been knocked off the air. I mean, I must be talking to myself here. I'm sitting here in this room, just talking to myself. Right? No, it's somebody outside the door nodding, saying, I'm not talking to myself. Okay, I'm talking to someone outside the door and me. And that's it. That's it, right? I mean, come on. I've always gotten phone calls, and I pleaded for phone calls, and there's not a single one. What's going on here? The phones are either broken, we're off the air, maybe both. Maybe I'm just insane. Maybe this is a bad dream. This is the end. This is everything is collapsing like a house of cards. There's no life. Oh, wait a minute, just wanted to find out. Okay. We are able to get lines out.
New York Telephone, may I help you?
Yes. Operator, is everything okay?
Yes.
Everything's all right. There's no, like, major disaster or anything going on outside, because I'm indoors and I haven't really been able to check recently, and I haven't heard anything.
No, everything's okay.
Okay, thanks very much.
You.
All right. When in doubt, always call a New York telephone operator. They'll reassure you. All right, I feel better now. Feel better coming down off this this peak load that I just went through. Yeah, okay. Feel like I was just on something most incredible. I panicked. I don't know what went over me. But I feel fine now. Phone lines are lighting up. The world is coming back into focus. Ah, yeah. And we only have 12 minutes to go. 632-6901. Oh, boy. You listeners really put it over on me that time. Good evening. Oh, now they're going to hang up on me. Good evening.
Hi, Eric.
Yeah.
Yes, it is a trick.
It is a trick, isn't it? What, do you all get together and just decide to not call at a certain time and make me panic and think the world exploded?
No, actually, yeah.
That's a lousy trick, you know.
I admit it.
That's a lousy trick.
Yep. I suppose it was.
Well, where is everybody? What's going on here?
Actually, everybody is right here. They're just being very quiet so that you don't know it.
They're all in your house, huh?
Yeah, it's not actually my house even. Borrowed it for the day.
Oh, you did, huh?
Yeah, and everyone who usually calls is here, even the guy who's in prison.
I don't want to hear about it. I don't want to hear. I just want to hear other callers because we only have a couple of minutes left. 632-6901, area code 516. Come on, let's go. Let's go.
Yes, they mind.
Pack them in here because we don't have much time left.
Even the guy in prison with the bad grammar.
The guy in prison with the bad grammar. Right, anybody. We're all the old people. We're all the new people. You know, there's always folks that are wandering through and they get us for the first time, you know?
Panting at the door. I won't let him in. If you listen quietly enough, you could probably hear him.
Are we on the air? I mean, you can hear us, right?
What?
You can hear us. We're on the air?
I can't hear you. Can you say something else?
Are we on the air? Can you hear us?
What?
Oh. This is pointless.
You are.
Loud and clear or fuzzy and faint?
Loud and clear.
Really?
Even though I'm in the basement.
I don't know what's going on here. I don't know what's going on. I'm losing my touch, my grip on reality. I don't know.
Lord.
Thank God I only have a couple of minutes of this left, and I'm not going to be here next week, so I can, relax for a little while.
Well, your show is called Brain Damage, right?
It is called Brain Damage, and I'm getting it tonight.
No, eventually all the people who usually listen to your show got it.
Oh, I see, and they went away somewhere. Well, look, there's a couple lines ringing. I'm going to try to get to them. 632-6901, area code 516. Maybe I'm getting out the wrong number. Good evening. Why do people do this? Why? Why? I ask you. Is there one sensible person out there? One? Now, because we only have really a couple of minutes, maybe 2 minutes, and sure it'd be nice to sort of end this with a conversation with somebody who can speak the language, you know? It's always a good way to end things and sort of makes people think, well, maybe next week won't be so bad. Maybe, you know, we'll get more real people calling up, you know? Let's find out. Good evening.
Elvis lives.
All right, well, that's a start anyway, isn't it? Good evening.
The Morse code says Mr. Radio will forever rot in hellfire.
Okay. Anyone else with prophecies of doom? Anyone else, was anyone in the earthquake? You know, no one's talked about the damn earthquake. Everyone in the world, you know, from Phil Donahue to Ted Koppel is talking about this earthquake, and nobody here wants to talk about the earthquake. I mean, an earthquake could happen at any time. Think about that. Any time. Happened right before the World Series, for God's sake. I mean, that shows you that nothing is sacred. Okay? It could occur at any moment in any place. They say it's not likely to happen in a place like this, but it could. And it only takes 15 seconds. Think about it. Are you prepared? No, you're not prepared because you don't have a Pacific Bell telephone book. Because in the Pacific Bell telephone books are the instructions of what to do in case of an earthquake. I don't see any Pacific Bell telephone books here. So there's really no hope for us. And I don't know, you know, if anyone knows, okay, this is a question. If anyone knows the safeguards, like the basic safeguards, you might save some lives here tonight if you just call up and tell us, what do we do if we feel the earth shaking? You know, because people in California know that. And the folks on TV this week were sort of priding themselves and saying, oh, the people in California know how to take care of themselves during an earthquake, and nowhere else are people so prepared. Great. But do they tell us how we can be prepared? No, they don't tell us the safety precautions that we should be undertaking. So does anyone out there that has ever lived on the West Coast or has ever glanced at a Pacific Bell telephone book and read the instructions or just has a sense of survival? 632-6901, quickly, because we're running out of time, let us know if you have any suggestions on survival in case of an earthquake. Good evening.
Eric, how are you?
Hi. Susan!
Hi.
Oh, a friendly voice. Thank God.
Thank you. It's a compliment.
Susan, can you tell me how to survive in an earthquake, that is?
It's pretty funny. I'm sitting here listening, and I know I have nothing of interest to say, but I felt...
Why is it everybody thinks that? Everybody thinks they have nothing of interest to say. You know, I think it's some kind of inferiority complex that Americans are given by somebody.
Maybe,
you know, we have lots
know.
Of interesting things to say.
Something that the psychologist should call you back and discuss that.
Well, you know, I don't want to be psychoanalyzed. I just want to know why people don't think they have anything interesting to say. They do.
Well, I do, actually, but it's all been said before.
I mean, some of the best calls in this program have come during this program. No, that didn't make any sense, did it? I've gotten good calls during this program is what I meant to say.
Okay, well...
Damn good calls, if I do say so myself.
This thing I just turned on, so...
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't know what's been said. I'm sitting here...
Absolutely nothing's being said. That's the whole point.
What?
It's like some horrible practical joke that everybody's playing on me.
Well,
nobody's saying anything, you know?
Let me say say something.
Say something, please.
I'm reading the special issue of Life, the 80s.
Yeah.
Except I think they printed it a little too early. I don't think you can, like, write about the 80s.
No, the 80s are still going on. How can you write about the 80s when it's still happening?
Oh, I think the most interesting things are going to be happening in the last few weeks. Why is it the disasters always happen at the end of the year? Did you ever notice that?
Well, this isn't the end of the year. I mean, it's towards the end of the year, but it's not...
End of the year.
Well, what are your other examples of disasters happening at the end of the year?
Crash a couple of years ago, that was pretty much towards the end. Hurricanes usually happen towards the end.
Uh-huh.
I guess.
Sort of, yeah.
Gloria happened towards the end, Hurricane Gloria.
It was September, I believe, wasn't it?
Yeah, September.
Well, I mean, you know, that's sort of in the middle, isn't it? I consider the end November, December.
I guess so. I don't know. It just occurred to me that most horrible things tend to happen towards the end of the year. The forest fire, that was in the summer, though.
What forest fire?
I remember a couple of years ago, there was a fire in the Midwest.
Oh, yeah, right, Yellowstone. That was last year.
That is the Midwest, right?
Yes, the last I heard.
Yes, I guess so.
Well,
I was just sitting here reading about the 80s and call.
Okay, well, I mean, that's something, you know. That's an interesting theory, Susan. I'll give you that.
Thank you very
much. Interesting theory, and... Maybe we can figure out what it means.
What you know? Means?
If all the disasters happen towards the end of the year, why is that?
I don't know. Maybe it's just more easy to remember them towards the end of the year.
Maybe it makes us say all the more easily, just wait till next year. What do you think?
You're pretty funny. You can't believe you called the New York telephone guy.
I had to. There's nobody else to talk to.
The only thing
I can look at is a CD player. I mean, nothing else I can talk to and get any kind of reassurance.
And
a CD player hasn't been talking to me
either.
Everything
is okay. No need to worry. Life is fine.
It's good to hear that, Susan. Although I do sense some mocking in your tone there.
No. I'm talking about the New York telephone guy, and I'm saying that his tone was very reassuring.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well.
Mocking you?
Yeah.
I wouldn't dare mock you. You never mock someone who's on the air and can potentially be heard by millions of people.
Thanks. You make me feel a lot better, Susan. I'll talk to you sometime, right? When I'm
sure I will.
Have you ever been to San Francisco? Let me just ask you that.
Yeah, I have. Actually, it's very creepy. I guess I can pass along another San Francisco story.
Okay.
I'm taking a class Tuesday night.
Okay.
And one of the people in this class, they told the teacher that she was going to come in from the airport, and she came in. I mean, the scene of her coming in with the suitcase from the airport.
Mm-hmm.
This class was happening about 9:00 Tuesday night, and nobody knew what happened until we got out of the class, and everyone was talking about, oh, San Francisco is so beautiful, because that's where she had just come from.
Oh my God!
It was just when I heard the news, and I just remembered her standing there with the suitcase. It was kind of creepy.
I remember just looking at the TV set the first few minutes, and it just, you know, everybody on TV really didn't know what to say. It seemed at one point as if a bridge had collapsed completely, you know, completely collapsed. It seemed like the whole city of San Francisco was on fire. It was scary. It really was. And, you know, it's just kind of that hopeless, numb feeling you get at the beginning.
In the beginning, I thought it was a movie because I walked into someone's house and saw it on the TV, and I really thought it was a movie.
Right. It certainly was bizarre.
You heard about with all the technological advances and all the different ways we have of passing news along, it didn't seem like any of it really was there anymore. You know, once the earthquake hit, it was like, you know, so-and-so called his mother and got the information from his mother, but there wasn't like, you hardly saw any film footage, and nobody really knew what fell and what didn't.
It was a lot of confusion. You heard about the survivor, did you?
Yeah, I heard.
Incredible.
I didn't know what happened, but...
They found him today underneath the wreckage.
How did they find him?
Well, they've been looking for lots of people, and most of them have... I mean, all of them have been dead up until now, but they found someone who was actually alive.
Really lucky guy.
It certainly is inspiring, I guess, to everybody who's over there. And
I'm sure it tells them not to give up.
I sure wish we had the Red Cross number here so we could give it out, but we don't. So if anyone knows it, call it in. But you got to really hurry. Because we're running out of time. Thanks for calling, Susan. I'll talk to you sometime.
Yeah, I'm sure I will. I'll be seeing you.
Okay.
Take care.
Good evening.
Yeah, Eric, you really want to know what to do in case of an earthquake?
if it's practical information, yes.
Sure. If you're inside, get under a desk or a table or stand in a doorway. So in case the ceiling starts falling or things fall off the wall, you won't get hit. And if you're in a city or an area with tall buildings, don't run outside, even though you think, you know, the building's going to collapse on you, because there'll be falling glass and bricks falling, and you'll be a lot more, it's a lot more dangerous outside than inside. And other than that, just, you know, keep flashlights and batteries and bottled water and canned foods at home. That, you know, that's basic sensible stuff anyway.
Okay, anywhere. But standing under a doorway, I think, is probably the one that most people wouldn't think of instinctively, because the support of a doorway is stronger than a ceiling, I suppose.
Oh, yeah, much.
Okay.
Yeah, and, I mean, you know, everyone thinks about California in terms of earthquakes, and but two of the biggest earthquakes in you know, American history, one was in Missouri, and one, I believe, was in South Carolina. So, I mean, they can happen anywhere. And you know, in an area of the country like this, you know, like Long Island, just a big pile of gravel. So the buildings aren't really resting on anything very sturdy. So we could, if we do get hit, it would hit pretty hard.
You know, that, you know, we don't get it as often, and all that means is it's less likely. But it eventually it will happen at some point.
And, yeah.
We're not prepared. So all we're saying is that when it does happen, it's going to be a lot worse.
Yeah, and if it was one, you know, even a moderate sized one like, you know, the one that hit San Francisco, which was, you know, pretty small compared to the, like, the 1906 one.
Right.
Something like that hit here, it'd just be, you know, New York would be wiped out.
Right. Well, I mean, the same exact magnitude hit Armenia.
Right,
25,000
right.
people died there. If you don't count the freeway, the freeway disaster, how many people actually died in San Francisco? Surprisingly few.
Yeah.
Surprisingly few.
Yeah.
So, okay, thanks for the tips.
Sure, anytime.
Okay. And I'll take one more call. Better be a good one. Good evening. No, it wasn't a good one. Okay. I don't know why people waste their time with such nonsense, but God bless them anyway. Make sure you tune in next week when we have the Black Mass on the air. That's going to be fun. It's going to be unusual. It's going to be unique. What makes USB such a special place to be. And it'll be our way of ushering in the Halloween season. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another edition, hopefully a livelier edition of Brain Damage. I don't know what has to happen. Does God himself have to come out of the sky and appear on TV and talk to people and answer all the questions about the afterlife? Then will we have something to talk about, you know? I don't know. What does it take? Do aliens have to come into the studio and offer to take the calls for me? I don't know. We'll think of something, though, because we're here to inspire comments, inspire discussion, you know? That's what it's all about. Anyway, talk to somebody. Talk to yourself. Talk to your cat. Because words are part of language. And we all know what language is, right? I'll see you in 2 weeks. Stay tuned for more fascinating USB programming. Good night.
Is on the grass. The lunatic is on the grass. Remembering games, daisy chains and locks. Got to keep the loonies on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my